If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, and welcome to the show. I'm Carol Gold. I'm here at Above the Fray with my co-host, Steve Clark. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
The number call-in is 914-803-4522 if you want to get in on this conversation. Of course, the show will be archived for you at your convenience. Steve and I want to talk about sort of the phenomenon that is Donald Trump, because not only is he a phenomenon by nature of his popularity and why, he's also a phenomenon if you look at where the attacks against him are coming from. So in many ways, he's a phenomenon all the way around. I mean, before he even ran for president, he was his own phenomenon. But now it's multidimensional. So let's take a look at it. I personally believe that Donald Trump is saying, even though policy-wise and agenda-wise and his own affiliations in the past have not necessarily been consistent with what he's espousing now, I believe that a lot of what Donald Trump is saying is what those of us who've been listening to conservative talk radio and reading conservative authors and have conservative opinions of our own have been saying and thinking for quite some time now. And I find it ironic that he's doing it in a way that is easy to poke fun at, because he's somewhat of a cartoon of himself, and he speaks without editing or thinking or caring about people's reaction. And I'm not judging that. I'm only stating it as a fact. But I think the thing that is most interesting to me is that whether or not liberals and people on the left understand or grasp that what he's espousing are conservative policies and conservative ideas, and what's happening is that people are rallying to that, people are being attracted to that, I think, Steve, without ever realizing what they're attracted to, because for so long it has been politically correct to hate and denigrate conservatives. So this phenomena that is the Donald, at least let's start here, Steve. Do you, because I've never discussed this with you, do you feel that there is, even though, like I said, he has other policies that he hasn't even spoken to yet, and I don't know whether he still holds them, like taxing the rich even more than they're already taxed, kind of like Warren Buffett's approach, but do you agree with me that around the border, around the veterans, around the media, he's basically espousing to rave reviews conservative viewpoints, yes or no?
Yeah, I have a little bit more of a different opinion. I think what's happened to Trump is that he's opining on something that the media just doesn't want to opine on, which is illegal immigration. He's got a few platforms. One is illegal immigration, which the most Americans believe is a problem, and the media says it's not a problem. The second kind of big point that he has is being very pro-business. The pundits as well as the White House are saying, you know what, we have a great economy, and most everybody that I know and I look at the markets for a living knows that the economy is not doing well. So kind of those are his two big points. And I think what's fascinating is that the media has been trying to sell a story, and the public has been sold the story, and they're not buying it. They're not believing it. And I think really kind of the crux of the matter is that, and what people are not fully understanding, is that the America is changing, and it's changing in a way that Americans didn't want it to be changed. And so what's happened is if you look back in the last 50 years, the Democratic Party has really won the white male vote. And so what they're doing from the 1965 Kennedy legislation to the Reagan amnesty in 86 and the Clinton one in 1996, where they legalized all these felons, what the Democratic Party has become savvy to is that they need other voters to vote for their policies, up into the point where Democratic Party really need the illegal vote to essentially solidify their position. It's nothing more than pure politics of establishing a type of rule and control that the Democratic Party wants. And the media has downplayed it, the Republican Party has downplayed it, because you have vested interests that want cheap labor. But the fact is that the American public, by and large, realizes that this is a massive problem for America. Essentially, we are getting non-Americans to vote in American elections and change the direction of this country. And what Trump is just basically tapping into is that groundswell of support and the groundswell of this anger that is taking place, and he's just tapping into it. And the media has no idea how to respond to it or act to it, and they don't understand where it's coming from because they have not been reporting the story. They have led people to believe that illegal immigration and immigration is a foregone conclusion, and there's nothing to be done about it. When in reality, Mexico deports every illegal immigrant. Most countries all over the world deport their illegal immigrants. We, on the other hand, have a complete open border policy that is destroying the country. And I think Trump is just tapping into that. What do you think?
Well, there's so many things you just said that triggered thoughts in my mind. The first thing is about the borders being open. I don't know if you saw it. There's a really stunning video up online. There was a professional model shoot in Miami, and they were on the beach. And I'm pretty sure it was Miami. They were on the beach, and while they're filming the model, it happens that all these illegal immigrants come running out of the water up the beach. And it's on the video.
I didn't see that. I've heard about it, though.
It's on the video. There must be, I'm guessing, I'm estimating now, because I watched, it was quick and I only saw it briefly, but I'd have to say there were 20 of them. And they're just in this video shoot because they were right behind the model and she was being filmed for professional purposes. So, number one, the borders are completely open. Okay, so we know that this is a problem. And people do realize that it's a problem for America, even though the media has told them it's not. I have a couple concerns about this. Number one, I heard today that under the current administration's exemptions and all of the ways that you can be here illegally, you currently cannot deport 85% of the illegal aliens that are here because they fall under 87%. They fall under exemptions. They fall under ways that they can stay that are currently in place. That leaves 13%. If you have 87% of the illegal people here that can't be deported, you have amnesty. You don't have to get amnesty. You don't have to pass amnesty. You have de facto amnesty by the fact that they're here. So I think it's even a bigger problem than we realize that certainly the media realize, and I think, Steve, even that the average person realizes, because I think there are people who think that if we get a different president or we approach this differently, we can reverse this problem. And I'm not sure there is a reversal of this problem. I certainly don't even see a limiting of the flow of this problem, let alone a reversal. But Steve, you said something earlier that really I think we need to address, and that is, you said Americans are getting America's changing, but not the way Americans wanted it to change. And I say, interestingly enough, you know, I'm currently reading Ayn Rand's book Return to the Primitive, and it's subtitled The Anti-Industrial Revolution. She wrote it in 71 as a paper. It later became a book, this book, in 77. It's recently been released with a new foreword by the head of the Ayn Rand Institute, and I came upon something very fascinating. It's actually in 1965 when the riots were in Berkeley, the student riots, and they were trying to overturn the university system and take control away from the regents and the university administrators and put it in the hands of the faculty and the students. Jerry Brown, not our Jerry Brown, currently the son, but the father, Edmund Pat Jerry Brown, was governor of California at the time. And in a New York Times article in May of 1965, talking about these uprisings by the students, that, by the way, were effective, Berkeley completely caved, and it began what basically became like a cancer that infected the university system across this country, but it began at Berkeley. Brown is talking in this article, and this is what he says, and the reason it's so key to me is because I think it's what happened to us and it's what's happening now. He said, therefore, some students felt they had the right to go outside the law to force the change, but in so doing, they displayed the height of hypocrisy. On the one hand, they held up the federal constitution, demanding their rights of political advocacy. But at the same time, they threw away the principle of due process in favor of direct action. Now, a little further down, it says that 74% of the people disapproved of the way the student protests were happening at Berkeley, but Brown would not denounce the movement or the fact that 45 students alone rewrote the Free Speech Manifesto that became part of Berkeley University's approach to student, faculty, and administration. So here's my point. 74% of the people didn't approve of what happened. 45 people actually affected the change. They did it through going outside the system, and as he said, waiving the Constitution as their right to do something, but eliminating due process. I think that what happened in 2008, what began in 2008, and this is the attraction to Donald Trump now, at least the reaction to 2008 is what is so magnetic about Trump. In 2008, we were promised hope and change, but he never said what kind of change. He only said he was going to radically transform the United States, which he's done. We didn't ask what kind of change, and they didn't offer what kind of change. And the most outstanding feature of the radical student movement that hit our universities in the 60s, and remember, you're talking about Barack Obama's in those universities then, right? He's there. Oh, Bill Ayers is there. What happened is they used violence and force to intimidate, to go outside of the system, to affect change. But they didn't have any plan for what the change looked like. I think from 65 roughly until 2008, all of that was maturing. It was growing up. They were graduating college. They were going into business. They were going into academia. And they were going with that same mindset of force works and change without purpose, but just for the sake of change. And you can break the back of the system if you just make enough noise. And so I think what's happened is America has awakened to, as you just said, Steve, change it never wanted, but we have to own responsibility for the fact that we never demanded what change was going to look like or even cared. We bought the bumper sticker, as I've said many times. And Donald Trump comes along, and he doesn't sound like the old guard. He doesn't look like the old guard. And he's addressing, quite honestly, the rage and the fury that is not so buried anymore in many Americans, because they've awakened to see that just like Gerald Brown, Edmund Brown, Pat Brown said in 1965, They waive the Constitution. Barack Obama waives this vision he has of a connected world and America being a better country, and he touts himself as a constitutional scholar, but he eliminates due process. He does it by fiat. He does it by executive order. He does it by force. He comes down on Congress, and they, like the administration and the regents of the 1965 era, they buckled, they folded. And so we're just looking at the nationwide manifestation of a movement that began in the 1960s. By the way, Steve, before I turn it back to you, just to hear what you think about all this, realize that at the same time that was happening, because I was at the time in the early 70s, mid-70s, I was working in affiliation with AIPAC, the Jewish lobby. Remember, it was about the same time that Arab nations began to buy chairs at major universities in order to affect the curriculum. So they were buying department heads and so that they could affect curriculum. And now, of course, we see, along with this completely collapsed Congress and this dictatorial president, we see a presence of anti-Semitism across our country in our college campuses. This is all the ripening of the seeds that were planted in the 1960s while everybody was laying around smoking marijuana, saying love and peace, and we're all one, kumbaya. The joke is, you now got, what's his name running with Hillary Clinton? Running against him? Bernie Sanders actually out there singing the Kumbaya songs again. Because he, too, is this idealistic hypocrite where he, too, would like change. But I don't think what kind of change he wants either is what the United States of America wants, because his agenda is socialism, and he's proud to say it. So that, I think, is full circle. The real question is, what happens with Donald Trump going forward? What happens with the other candidates? Because, and I know I'm throwing a lot out here, Steve, grab what you want when I'm done. Trump is sucking a lot of, so am I at the moment, sucking a lot of air out of the room, and he's preventing us from hearing serious candidates who stand for what he's standing for, the Ted Cruz's on the border and Planned Parenthood, the Rand Paul's on the border, flat tax and Planned Parenthood. We're not hearing these people. And by the way, their own parties are out to get them as well. The Republican Party are out to get the ultra-conservatives. We're not hearing these people because Trump is front and center. And I don't know that he's presidential material. I don't know that he's not. I don't know that he is. But at the moment, and we haven't had the debates yet, that comes August 8th, at the moment, he gets all the attention. And we're not hearing serious voices that are schooled and educated and articulate and up on what's really going on in Congress. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. Two things there. I think that the first thing that I want to address is that what's fascinating about Trump is that both parties don't like him. And that's actually, I find that fascinating. That really goes to show you how entrenched both political parties have become. And it's just, it's a bit of a test. It's kind of a royalty. Basically, both sides get to play at the big table, and they switch parties. You know, you get 4 years, I get 4 years, and they scratch each other's backs, and they get what they want. And Trump is really saying to both parties that game is over. If I'm going to be president, those deals that you've cut, those agreements that you've made, those are going to be over. And both parties are freaking out because they know he means it. I mean, he's a guy that has the ability to speak to the public, and like him or not, and go directly with his message. And he can influence and shape public opinion in a way that they can't. To the point that you make, and it's a valid point, is that you're right. You know, he is stifling out other conversations, but That's their job, right? They wanted to enter, the politicians wanted to enter the arena of public ideas and public battle, And so here you have a guy who's battling. And if you want to go battle, and if you think your ideas are more valid, then they should be out there battling with Donald Trump. They should be saying, this is where he's flawed and this is where I'm better. So I don't have any real sympathy for the Republicans or the Democrats in that sense, that Trump is driving the message and he's doing a better job at it. I personally love a guy like Ted Cruz, but you know, if Ted Cruz has to get out there and he has to get his message across, you know, politicians are, you know, it's an epic battle to become president, and you need a lot of force behind you. Or a guy like Ben Carson, he's drowning out their voices, but at the same time, is they're responsible for getting their voice out there. It's not for us to say he's drowning out the voice. It's up for Ted Cruz and all these other Republicans and Democrats to say, well, you know what, he's wrong on this issue, and this is why he's wrong. So I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing. I think if anything, Trump might elevate all these people's games to really, you know what, Trump has tapped into the immigration and business movement, and he's going to move the candidates to get something to do on both those issues, which I think is a very good thing, Carol. What do you think?
I think it's a good thing, too. I am a little suspect that one of the reasons he is sucking all the air out of the room is because the media are playing to that. They're only covering him. You know, they're pretty much only covering him. The story today was with Ivana Trump and the allegation, you know, that he had raped her years ago. And she came forward to say, there's no truth to that. We were going through a bitter divorce and things were said, but there was no truth. He's a good man. We raised three children. I endorse him wholeheartedly, for president. Every day there's a story, and there always will be for all the candidates, because it's the vetting process, right? It's, can they take the heat? Do they have any skeletons in their closet? I get that. I just wonder, Steve, how much media complicity, you know, I don't trust the media, and Donald Trump said to Anderson Cooper the other day, right to his face in an interview, he said, Anderson, nobody trusts you. And he meant both Anderson Cooper and he meant the entire profession. Nobody trusts the media. So I'm wondering if they haven't colluded in some way and decided, here's what we're going to do, because if we cover him this way, if we give him all the coverage, and then he does suck up all the air in the room, and then he crashes and burns, the rest of them will be scrambling like latecomers to the party to try to fill the void that his absence will leave. I suspect that they're covering him excessively for a reason. And because I've become so skeptical in general and so mistrusting of the media for the right reasons, I'm not sure there isn't, you know, both a Democrat and a liberal plan, and a media plan, which are one in the same, Democrat, liberal, and media, to manipulate the Republican roster in order to hurt them, in order to cause whoever the nominee is to be the wrong person, to be a weak person, to be whoever, because they manipulated the field through how they covered Trump. Now, I personally believe that the first debate will be a turning point of sorts. He's either going to come off in that debate as he's come off so far, which is strong and speaking what appears to be a populist message, or he's going to come off looking really like the second string. You're going to hear the kind of brilliance and logic and debate skill that a Ted Cruz can put forward. You're going to hear the conviction of a Rand Paul. You're going to hear the passion and the what appears to be the genuine good-heartedness of a you just said his name, Ben Carson. So I think the debates may be a turning point, but up until then, it's too soon to call. Like you, I really like Ted Cruz. My concern with Ted Cruz is, and I just watched today a one-hour interview that he had with Katie Couric, and a friend of mine who lives up in the Northeast called me and said, I can't believe you're for this guy. They had him on Sesame Street, I think. Whoever put him on that show should have had their heads chopped off. And they had him imitating all the Sesame Street characters, and she said it was just pathetic. It was so awkward. It was embarrassing. She couldn't watch it. I noticed in the Katie Couric interview, he's so serious, you know? He's serious because he's an intellectual, because he's brilliant, because he knows how to have intelligent debate, but people need to warm up to that candidate as well. And that's my concern with him. It's not his conservatism, and I certainly don't think it's his war chest. My concern with him, and I have, you know, full disclosure, I have offered to volunteer for his campaign. I'm just concerned that the likability factor, which can't be denied in a world where we're all tuned to 15 minutes of fame and media personalities, the likability factor matters. So I don't know where that leaves us, but as I just said, Steve, I don't think Trump is a bad thing. I think what you said is true. He has the potential to heighten everybody's game. I just think we're still a far way away from what this is actually going to look like in the end. And it always scares me that the two dynasties, the Clintons and the Bushes, may yet show up on our doorstep one more time, despite the Kathleen Willies and despite the people who are trying to remind the country that Hillary and Bill Clinton are untrustworthy, unethical, and that Jeb Bush is a non-issue issue. He's so bland and not conservative. I don't know. I still worry that there's a machine and there's a game we're not even privy to that puts these people in places of power.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're the point that a lot of people have made is that you have to look at this, aside from everything that we look at it, you have to look at it from the money game, and there's only a handful of people that can raise that type of money, and that's the Bushes and the Clintons. And it looks like Ted Cruz is in there, and it looks like Donald Trump is in there, but it'll be interesting to see who else can raise the money to win an election like that. I think that's why everybody's fearful of Bush and Clinton, because they know they're going to be there for the long haul.
Yeah, it's not it's the money. And, you know, I remember years ago when I was a Democratic senator suggested that I run for office in Pennsylvania for the Congress. And I heard the term for the very first time. There are kings and kingmakers. There are an awful lot of kingmakers behind the Bushes and behind the Clintons. And it concerns me. Those machines have been in place for and perfected for a very long time. I think it's going to take something akin to some kind of a popular uprising of sorts, and I don't know what that looks like, or an incredibly transformative intervening event, be it an act of nature, terror, or economic collapse, that causes the trajectory to change and for the nation to wake up to the fact that we need a true leader. I think Ted Cruz is one because I listen to him, and I'm listening to intelligence. I'm listening to respect for Constitution. I'm listening to respect for the letter of the law. And I'm listening to someone who speaks truth to power, as he did on the Senate floor this week to Mitch McConnell. He called out the majority leader for lying to the rest of the congressional caucus. So I think in many ways, he's a remarkable human being. I don't know if we deserve a remarkable human being yet. I don't know if we're there. I think a lot of this rests on us as citizens to make ourselves heard and make ourselves known. By the way, I just want to say in the last minute, if you care at all about the obscenity of Planned Parenthood and the grotesqueness of using, at the latest revelation, ultrasounds to move the baby's positioning so they can more readily harvest the organs while the baby is still alive, then call your congressmen and senators, because as I understand, the last I heard, Rand Paul has forced a vote on the Senate floor before the session ends August 8th, and there will actually be a vote on defunding Planned Parenthood. So call your congressmen, call your senators if you believe that Planned Parenthood should not be receiving public funding and harvesting organs from babies. So that's about as clear as I can make it. Steve, we're running out of time. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And thanks for listening to Above the Fray. We'll be back again here on when, Steve? Thursday? Yeah. We'll be back here again Thursday night.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.